We are talking health in your 40s here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are upsides, there are downsides at this midpoint of life, and we're exploring the mental and physical health of both women and men and what changes in this decade of life and why some of these changes are really not openly discussed. There are some obvious signs, perhaps the gray hair, the growing waistline, not being able to read the finer print. What do you wish you knew about how your health would change before you entered your 40s? What advice do you have for people approaching this decade? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Matthew Herbst is a family medicine physician with SSM Health, which provides care to patients across Illinois, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin. His practice is in Wanakee. Dr. Herbst, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you.
So when you have patients in their 40s come in, what is the most common concern, or is there one that people didn't expect to experience at this age?
I guess that's difficult to say because I see a wide variety of reasons that people come in, and they may vary from depression, anxiety issues to musculoskeletal issues. Usually in the 40s, those are probably the primary things that we see. And it kind of depends, too, depending on the sex of the patient. Often females are at this age are more preventative medicine, and they'll come in for other cares and the pap smears, the mammograms, things that we consider and we discuss on a regular basis. It's much less often that I'll get males to come in their 40s. They often tend to hold off a little bit longer and kind of, I don't know if it's a fear of what they'll see the doctor or if they just feel like they don't need it as much. But often it varies quite a bit. I'll get a lot of people that come in, as far as males, they'll often come in when there's an ache or a pain that's really bothering them, or if they have a significant health concern or family history that they'd like to discuss further.
Well, speaking of aches and pains, we went around WPR asking people in their 40s about their unexpected health issues they face. And we talked with Jason Butler. He is WPR's assistant to the director, and here's what he shared.
I remember when I turned 40, I had my first doctor's appointment after that. I remember saying to my doctor, I feel like I'm getting older. It is like aches and pains, you know, not recovering from exercise quite as quickly. I remember that happening.
So what's going on there with aches and pains? Is that real?
It's definitely real. I feel like people are getting they tend to be a little bit less active for years, especially in their initial working years and when they have children. So they're often less active than they used to be in their 20s and their teens. And then they kind of, in a way, let their body go a little bit more and focus more on other things in life. And then they start to try to get more active. And as they've been less active, the aches and pains tend to be more prominent. Just the same thing would be if you had a person that didn't do much with activity, maybe even in their 20s, if they were very inactive for some reason significant, let's say if they're going to medical school per se, and they don't do anything and aren't as active.
Oh, that never happened.
Yeah.
No.
they may, after just starting at that age, they may even start noticing some of those aches and pains sooner. People that often stay active and stay busy, or if they have a job that keeps them active, they have less of those acute aches and pains when they first start exercising or being more active. But they tend to start as in our 40s and late 30s even, and then they tend to progress and be more prevalent as we age.
So what can people do to feel better? Is there anything that you can do, or is there something that you just kind of have to live with that deterioration?
That depends on every person and kind of exactly what the cause is of their pain. Mm-hmm. So if they're having some more aches and pains, one, the biggest thing that you can do is start to be more active, trying to slowly build up your exercise tolerance. If you're increasing blood flow, you increase your healing processes, and you can start to feel better. Now, if you have you've had a significant injury in the past, let's say I get a lot of guys that come in and say, "Oh, I blew up my knee back in high school football," or some other injury. If they had a significant injury to their knee where they had cartilage damage or a meniscal tear, they're starting usually often will start to have more arthritis starting at that age. So then we have to modify the activity or things to allow them to still function without irritating that arthritis at an earlier onset.
So you really have to dig into that history to understand where those pains are coming from.
Yeah.
We're talking with Dr. Matthew Herbst. He is a family medicine physician with SSM Health. you can join in. Do you have trouble dealing with the fact that you're at this midway point? How did that manifest? And women, what was menopause like for you? Maybe you expected the hot flashes, but were totally taken aback by the other changes that went with it. We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So getting back to exercise and feeling better, what happens when you do try to recover from exercise? You start exercising or maybe try to build that exercise up. Is the recovery time longer?
That does a change. There's a change throughout aging that slowly we have different muscle mass. We have different elasticity in our tendons. So yes, that recovery does, and our metabolism changes, which affects our ability to have increased blood flow and changes and bring nutrients to our muscles and our bones and our joints. So as these changes occur and that slowly occurs through life, then we'll have some more of those prolonged recovery stages that we're talking about. So it's definitely possible. It's just you have to give yourself time to heal after you break it down. So in general, when we build up muscle mass, we build up exercise and we build up endurance. At a younger age, we can do things more quickly often mm-hmm. to build up our endurance and our strength. But as we age, we just need to have a little bit more time to allow our body to kind of recover and rebuild. Often we break it down and then we rebuild stronger.
What happens to our memories in this decade? Because I know that when I can't think of a word, I'm like, oh my God, I can't think of a word. I'm so afraid.
That's a very common concern. So we get a lot of different things. I believe that a lot of the memory issues can pertain to different things. So we can get the menopausal transition period that can happen before menopause occurs and hormone changes that can affect memory in general. Other things are often, I think, that we're also just a lot busier than we used to be. We have to plan schedules for our children. We have to plan schedules, you know, vacations with other people, with our work, our busy work life, and we combine that with just planning for everybody and not just ourselves anymore. So I feel like the combination of we have just a lot more on our plate at that stage, and then we start to be more concerned about our memory, and we kind of start to face mortality kind of in that age as well. We see things that are happening to friends or parents or grandparents, you know, and then we start to realize that this could be affecting us as well, and it's very common.
Are there any mental exercises that you could suggest that help improve a person's memory recall or really exercise the brain?
There are a lot of things, anything that really challenges your brain. So there are Sudoku puzzles, there are crossword puzzles, things that apps continuing to read and learn on a regular basis. Just reading the newspaper alone just challenges your brain in different ways. So newspaper for some people, or if they're reading online articles, things like that. But really challenging your brain, continuing to go to class actually can be beneficial. So even if you're going to college again and taking on a course that seems interesting to you, or you're just reviewing things, any way of challenging your brain is kind of like another muscle. If we keep challenging it and working through it, it'll synapses will align better and we'll do better at it.
So probably trying out a different language maybe or sitting down at a piano and learning how to play or something like that.
I'd say definitely music and things. The difficulty with trying a new language is definitely more difficult as we age. We have a lot of what we call neuroplasticity, and our brain can really learn things at a young age. So that's why our school systems are starting to teach different languages even in the grade school age now, is because at that age we can really adapt and pick up language much more easily. I'm not saying you can't do it. We definitely can do it as we age, but it's just not as easy as it once was.
We are talking about health in your 40s with family medicine physician Matthew Herbst at our side. What do you wish you knew about how your health would change before you entered your 40s? What advice do you have for people approaching this decade? And what health question do you have? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a moment with more health in midlife right here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring health in your 40s this hour and what to expect in this decade and how to deal with the changes happening in the body. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Maybe you are living this time. Your hairline receding, your eyesight is super wacky, you can't so much as pick up a box without worrying about throwing your back out. There are new health issues to be concerned about at this midpoint in life. And were you prepared for it? How did your metabolism change in this decade? Do you have more trouble grappling with the fact that you are in a new decade of life? How did that feeling manifest in women? What is menopause like for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. And family medicine physician Matthew Herbst stays with us. Let's take a call now. Let's go to Lisa joining us from Janesville. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I am in the later stages of perimenopause, and all my life I was naturally pretty muscular, and I could lift weights and put on muscle easily, and that started going away about 45, and I'm 49 now, and the last 6 to 9 months I've gotten this layer around my stomach and my hips that just won't go away no matter what I do, and that's been probably the most shock, even though I was aware it was going to happen, the most difficult thing to accept and deal with.
Lisa, thanks so much for the call. First of all, she brings up perimenopause. Can you explain?
So perimenopause, we consider often, it varies with every woman, but it often starts at the age of 47 on average. And the perimenopause period is, you start to notice some different changes. Menopause is really classified as once you've had no menstrual cycles or periods for a period of 1 year. Prior to that, you may notice some other changes in your physical abilities. You may notice changes in your menstrual cycles. Time may increase. You might notice some increased issues with changes in vaginal lubrication, other issues. So there are, and then as well as these muscle changes and other things, because we do have fluctuations in our estrogen levels and other hormones in our bodies in our 40s and in that perimenopausal period.
So what about what Lisa is feeling like? She's got extra weight in the hips and in her abdomen. What's going on there?
Yeah, and I feel like this is a very common. It's like Lisa had said that it sounds like she knew that this was coming, and that this is very common as we age, as we have a prevalence of our what we call our muscle to kind of fat or adipose tissue ratio, and as we kind of age throughout life, that starts to change. We have an increased fat to muscle layer, men and women the same. We start to decrease our muscle mass, and then we increase our fat level. Now, for decreasing that muscle mass, which she said is one of those difficulties of really gaining muscle at this age and started in her 45, that our muscle is correlated very significantly with our metabolism. So if we start to decrease that muscle mass, we decrease our ability to burn energy. And then if we don't burn that energy, it gets turned into fat more often. So that is kind of a cycle that can kind of perpetuate itself.
What about getting shorter?
Getting shorter. Well, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Getting shorter definitely happens. Usually we can lose weight, size and height-wise. The big thing is our intervertebral discs. So our spine is built of multiple vertebrae. In between those vertebrae and the bone portion is what we call an intervertebral disc. Those discs are really well hydrated. They're full of kind of water content. And what happens with age is they usually, as you lay down at night, they kind of refill with water, okay? We're no longer putting that pressure on our spine. And then as we get up and we're more active during the day, we continue to compress, and that it kind of works as shock absorbers throughout our spine. And then those kind of don't, as we age, they don't fill up with water as much. So then we tend to notice that our height changes more significantly there. Other things that can happen as well, if we have an increase, what we call kyphosis or a curve in our upper back, then we also will notice we're being shorter, especially the people that are nowadays always working on computers. We're always bent forward. We get tighter muscles in the front. So then we tend to not straighten up as much. So that'll change our height. But if you do want to feel taller, I would definitely recommend that you check your height in the morning. You're taller in the morning than you are at the end of the day as we slowly squish that water out of our intervertebral discs.
Let's go to Mark now from Black River Falls. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
What's Hello? On your mind? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. First, I want to say thank you for the doctor being with you, but with us, I guess.
Yeah.
And because I'm hearing some stuff that's just incredible. And I am a person, I'm going to be 52 at the end of the month. In my 20s, I had fallen and broken my back while I was working. And all along before then, I was very physically active and always was in shape. And that's what the doctor told me has really helped me recover from that. I fractured L5 at the waist. I have nerve damage, etc. I continually fight to remain in shape. However, there are times where it's difficult to do. I had actually, being 5'10", I was at 235 pounds and approaching 240 before I kicked myself and said I need to get back to how I was. This is when I was in my 30s. Now, as I approach my 40s, I'm struggling with it, and to my 50s, I'm still carrying with it. I'm now 185 pounds, and it's a struggle, but the thing of it is, I like to reach out to people. Do the best you can. Well, stay in the best shape you can, and don't let yourself go.
Mark, thank you so much for the call, and it sounds like it's been a real struggle for Mark to keep that weight off.
Yes, I think that Mark is has an inspirational story. He's talking about really trying to stay in shape the best you can, which is a struggle for all of us. Mm-hmm. As we age and have less time with exercise, and we're no longer in as many sports and activities as we were when we were younger. So I think the big struggle is keeping that weight off and doing the best you can. I find the hardest thing to do is finding something that you really enjoy. So finding an exercise routine that you enjoy and that you can tolerate, I think, will help you to continue to do that every day to day. So you don't dread looking forward to that exercise. You more look forward to it because it's a break. It's something that you enjoy.
Well, let's talk about sleep for a moment. There was a study that found that between the ages of 40 and 55, people slept about 20 minutes less than young adults. Why do we lose more sleep as we get older?
That's a multifaceted question, I guess I would say. There are many things ways that can be affected. So some that can be affected. One, we don't need as much sleep as we're growing when we're much younger in our teens. We actually need more sleep than when we're older because we're constantly growing and we grow a lot while we're sleeping. So your body's rebuilding up and healing during that time, and you're going through a lot of changes. As we age, our body, again, if you're exercising more and things like that you're breaking down, you do require a little bit more sleep and more rest. But the changes can happen for many reasons. Sometimes, let's say if we have children, we might have to not really be able to do the things that we need to do or want to do until our kids are already in bed or we feel like we've taken care of our family. We also, maybe at times, we tend to look at our devices, so watching TV or looking at our phones or our iPads or computer work after the kids have gone to bed, and that light can help to stimulate you to be more awake and make it more difficult to fall asleep. There are blue screens and other things that we can change to help with that. But some of those things that we feel like we can do to finally relax and say, okay, now I can just check the things that I care about, can definitely affect things. So that can wake you up a little bit more and make it more difficult to fall asleep. Sometimes exercising, and we're doing the things that we said, oh, yes, the doctor said go exercise, I'm doing this, but mm-hmm. Now it's at 9 o'clock at night after the kids are in bed or things have changed. And that being stimulated can also make you more awake and make it more difficult to fall asleep.
How much can we blame hormones?
Hormones definitely can affect things as far as your body goes and changes. They can affect sleep to an extent, but I can't really speak on to what level. I don't know the percentage or the amount that affects it. I don't feel that hormones are affecting it as much as the other factors in our life.
Let's go to Melissa in Madison now. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. I just wanted to share a few things. I'm in my late 40s, and I actually feel great. And I give a lot of credit to the fact that I started practicing yoga about 22 years ago. It really has just kind of kept me aware of what's going on in my body. Whenever there was an issue, I was able to kind of address it pretty quickly. But I have noticed in recent years that I was kind of putting on some belly fat, and the mental focus and clarity haven't really been there as much, and my sleep hasn't been as great. And I just recently discovered intermittent fasting, and it has been really amazing for me. It's just brought back the mental clarity. I'm losing the belly fat. I'm sleeping better. And I was just curious what the doctor knows about intermittent fasting and if you could talk about some of the benefits.
Thanks, Melissa. Great question.
In general, the intermittent fasting, I think it depends on the person. So some patients, we definitely do not recommend fasting. So people that have diabetes or on medications that require you to eat with them, we definitely don't want that to be a consideration for them unless they talk to their doctor. We want to make sure that they're aware of the changes and how it could affect their body. As far as for general person, if they're young, healthy, they don't have a lot of comorbidities, intermittent fasting, I know there's some research out there. I can't speak enough to it. I know there's been some benefit to weight loss and some other things, but I haven't read the research on it recently on that, so I can't speak intelligently about that.
Sounds like, though, that Melissa has found that yoga has really helped with some of that clarity and her ability to check in with her own body.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yoga, Tai Chi has been shown in older adults and other things as well to be very beneficial. One, being aware of your body position in space, you're being aware a little bit more of your muscles and your joints and how you're feeling. The other things that it's been shown is had decreased falls risk in our elderly. So if you can start in your 20s and stay active, that is definitely the key.
We are stalled out in the midlife. Health in the 40s is what we're exploring here with Dr. Matthew Herbst. He's a family medicine physician and helping us understand the mental and physical changes that happen in this decade. Your questions, your insights there, welcome this hour at 800-642-1234. Does your health in middle age predict how healthy you'll be later in life? There's a new study out from the American Geriatric Society where researchers identified factors associated with brain health in middle age in order to identify ways to preserve brain function when people are older. We'll talk about that right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're getting acquainted with how bodies change in our 40s. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And new research suggests that staying physically active in midlife depends a lot on our overall satisfaction with life or mental well-being a decade earlier, not just your physical health. Men and women with high mental well-being at the age of 42 were more physically active at the age of 50 compared to those who got lower scores in mental well-being at age 42. That's according to a study published in the journal Applied Research in Quality of Life. So what's your mental state in your 40s? Are you ready for the changes? What are you experiencing? And when you entered your 40s, what changes were you not prepared for? Join in with your insights, your questions at 800-642-1234. And family medicine physician Matthew Herbst is our guide to midlife health, the good and the challenging. So we're going to go back now and hear Susanna Michaels from WPR, who is a senior development specialist here, talking about life in her 40s.
One thing that happened when I started menopause at 48 was that I became extremely agitated. Like, it was this nameless agitation. If someone said, "How are you?" I would be speechless because I was extremely unsettled.
So what is going on there with that agitation?
Well, it's difficult to say, not knowing the person in general and all the stressors upon her life at that time. With menopause, you do have significant estrogen changes and changes in our hormones. So we do notice that there's some research shows that there's a 2.5 times risk of increasing depression during this time. Now, is that combined by hot flashes and not getting enough sleep? Is that combined by other changes that we're worried about in our life or other factors and stressors in our life at that time? It's difficult to say. But there is definitely an increased uptick in the agitation and irritation. Some people present depression in many different ways. And a lot of people notice the decreased ability to kind of get themselves motivated and do other things, but some people just get more agitated as their depression. And if somebody's easily agitated and has other issues and we're noticing that in our loved ones, that's something that we should kind of be aware of, that maybe there's depression and other things going on. And I think that that's definitely could be a portion of it. Like I said, the changes that you're going through in your life as well as the stressors. But
what happens to testosterone levels in men in their 40s?
Testosterone levels in our 40s don't change as much as females in their 40s. So usually we do have what we call a male menopause, a little bit more was briefly discussed in our med school training, but it's kind of more happens in the 60s to 70s age range. Some it may start to decline in our 50s. Often the testosterone levels aren't as significantly of a dip as we are as females in these ages.
Why isn't only briefly touched on in med school, do you think, for men?
That is a good question. That's difficult to say. I know we talk there's a lot more that we know and we affect for women's health issues at that time. There's a lot more cancers and screening that we look into. And so I think there's a lot of focus from that standpoint. We do discuss it more, the testosterone levels, but then there's also the increased risk of supplementing testosterone. And that can be a very complex question of what we should. There's a lot of commercials out there and media saying you have low T or low testosterone and effects on sex drive, effects on ability to exercise and endurance and build muscle, which it can happen if you do have low testosterone, but it's much less common than the media would like us to be aware of in our 40s.
So let's talk about sex. What changes might men and women see in their 40s?
Well, that depends on the sex. So if we're talking about male patients, we definitely notice that they have decreased, they require more stimulation to have an erection. It's pretty common. Also, the refractory period between being able to have intercourse in multiple times is a little bit longer. It's not the same as when we were 18 or 20. It just takes longer to be able to get another erection. Other things that we notice, and I hear complaints often from patients in their 40s and 50s, are that their erection doesn't seem to stand as strong or isn't as firm as it once was. And that is pretty common as we age.
What about for women?
For women, we often notice that it's more when we get that perimenopausal period or the menopausal period. We tend to notice that they're starting to have decreased mucus production. We'll have more, at times, what we call vaginal atrophy. So a healthy mucosa, I guess, in the mouth is one thing to think about, is you have saliva and mucus production, and that kind of stays throughout our life. In the vagina, that's more very estrogen dependent. So if our estrogen levels are decreasing over time, there's also decreased mucus, and it's less thick, the mucus and the lining of the vagina at that time. So that can increase dryness and kind of the elasticity of the vagina. So we tend to have more concerns with either vaginal dryness, irritation, what we call atrophic vaginitis. You can also have increased dyspareunia or pain with intercourse can be also identified. A lot of people tend to struggle with these on their own. Increased lubrication can help with some of those factors. Being aware of, it may take increased time also for females to be more stimulated as well. So it's just being aware of each other, talking with your partner about these sort of things. Other things that can happen that we consider for that age patient, especially people that are reaching that menopause period or more of that atrophic vaginitis type situation, are vaginal estrogens that can be beneficial and kind of revitalize the tissue in that area and help a lot with these type issues.
So patience is a virtue there.
It is.
All right. So moving on, does digestion change for people in their 40s? What about that digestion?
So digestion, it changes significantly, especially the amount of acid. Vitamin B12 is usually from eating meats and beans and other things like that. And that level, our acid's ability to break that down and absorb that can change. Usually I don't see a lot of issues with that in the 40s. We get that at a little older. What I hear more in the 40s are people aren't able to tolerate milk as well as they used to be. It may cause some diarrhea, looser stools, some indigestion. So we have decreased ability to break down milk products and dairy as we age as well. And that often starts in the late 30s to 40s.
We're talking with Dr. Matthew Herbst. He is the family medicine physician with SSM Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you wish you knew about your health and how it would change when you entered your 40s? What advice do you have for people approaching this decade as you look back at your 40s? And what questions do you have about your changing health at midlife? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Doctor, how does the risk of cancer change during this decade? What do we know there?
It depends on the type of cancer. So cancers are very prevalent, and it's a major part of what we do as preventive medicine, looking and screening for these cancers. Cancers with age, they tend to increase in prevalence. Things that we look for often that we think of in the 40s are, especially with females, we're thinking about breast cancers. Now, that can also happen in males, so don't completely discount that. It can happen in a small amount of males as well. So if you have significant family history, being aware from that standpoint as well. The big things we look for are lumps, bumps, nipple discharge, things that you're concerned about, definitely talk with your doctor. Other things that we consider are cervical cancer. So those pap smears that we used to do at the age of 15 or 16 or first sexual contact, those things have changed as well. Now we start doing that at 21 and after the age of, and usually with the current recommendation from the U.S. Preventive Task Force is every 3 years we do those, so less often, which I feel like a lot of women in their 40s often say, well, shouldn't I have a pap smear every year? We used to do that. And some of those are discussions, you know, if they're worried about risk, if they have a higher risk and they have had family or friends that have had it, if they've had abnormal pap smears in the past, we should consider that more often. After the age of 30, we actually recommend as long as they do HPV and the pap smear cytology together, we recommend that it switches out to every 5 years. So those can be concerning to some patients that used to be treated in a different way as our medical knowledge changes.
Let's take another call now. Let's go to Diana in Madison. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I just wanted to say that as far as my 40s, I had my second child when I was 39. And so I'm not sure whether or not it was because of having a baby or, you know, I had one 4-year-old already who was very active. And I was a special ed teacher. And so I really didn't have a whole lot of time to slow down. And so I don't think, you know, that looking back, I really noticed a whole lot of changes when I went into my 40s, because, you know, if it was with the two kids or active lifestyle before that, but I didn't start to see any kinds of slowing down. When I hit my 50s, definitely. But 40s for me was not so much of a big deal.
Oh, Diana, thank you so much for your personal story there. It sounds like kids did keep her young when you had kids at an old age, advanced maternal age.
It sounds like she didn't have time to really slow down, so that was a part of it. I mean, congratulations. That is great that you had it and that everything worked well for you. And I'd say definitely it's keeping you young, keeping you active, keeping you moving, and that's the key to growing old gracefully.
So what about the risk for urinary tract infections, and what do we know about bladder?
So bladder can change on, again, there can be many things that can affect the bladder as well. So one of the things just to think about with increased urinary tract infections, when I'll sometimes have people in their 40s, more often their 50s, that'll have increased urinary tract infections, females and predominantly. But often that will change also with that atrophy of the vagina. They tend to have some different pulling on the urethra, which opens in that area, and that allows more bacteria in. Also, that mucus, decreased mucus, can affect the bacteria. So some people have significant improvement in recurrent UTIs and urinary tract infections or just vaginal discomfort, again, with the considering just vaginal estrogen, which doesn't affect the whole body, and changes from that standpoint. As far as males go, there definitely can be urinary tract infections as well. All that kind of depends on many different factors. And if they have other comorbidities, if you have diabetes, you're at higher risk. There's more sugar in the urine, which bacteria can grow on if there's other factors. So it's it can be a difficult conversation.
Talking about life in the 40s, what health changes we encounter in midlife. During this time of life, we realize that the passing of time is unavoidable and inherent part of human condition. Family medicine physician Matthew Herbst stays with us. Do you have trouble grappling with the fact that you're entering a new decade of age? Perhaps it was no problem at all. Have you dealt with the fact of aging in midlife? Join in with your health questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about health as a 40-something here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. 40-somethings make up a big chunk of the people in the so-called sandwich generation. These are people who care for kids and their aging parents. And just like any caregiver, sandwich-aged adults may experience stress. Pew Research estimates about half of all U.S. adults in their 40s or 50s have a parent age 65 or older, and they are either raising a young child or financially supporting a grown child. What do you know about health and staying well in this decade? There's still time for you at 800-642-1234. Dr. Matthew Herbst is a family medicine physician, and he's helping us out on all of these health questions in this decade. Let's go to Paul now, joining us from Maguanago. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well. What's on your mind about this decade?
Well, I have got a friend through the PA, and she has recommended taking some omega-3s for brain clarity and thinking things. Just wondering what the doctor would say about that.
Thanks so much, Paul. What about vitamins?
So in general, vitamins, I think it depends on your diet. If we can take in more of the vitamins and things in our diet, if you can eat more fish in particular for the omega-3s or other things of benefit, vitamins are better if we can take it in our food. Omega-3 supplementation, I don't think is a bad idea. It can help. It has been shown to help with many different things. Definitely the things that we commonly think about for are more your cholesterol level and maybe when we're not talking about statins yet, if you've got a significant family history of heart disease or your cholesterol is a little high and you want to be proactive about your health, omega-3s are a good idea from that standpoint. I can't speak as much on how it can affect brain clarity. There are many different things that we think may be a benefit to that. But I think it could have multiple health benefits, and it's not a bad supplementing. But again, if we can change our diet to really take in the nutrients and the vitamins that we need, I'd prefer it from that method. And then vitamins also are recommended kind of as we age, especially in our female patients, talking about calcium supplementation, vitamin D that can be in our diets to help bone weakness as we age.
Well, let's look at our teeth here for a moment. Do we see more tooth decay happening in this decade?
We can. Part of that is kind of the age-old recommendations from our dentists and our doctors, you know, that apple a day, but more brushing our teeth on a regular basis. Dental decay can have many bad effects on our health. So it's definitely keeping up with your dentist on a regular basis, we recommend. But the things that we consider for that are it can increase your risk of heart disease. It can increase your risk of significant infections. You can have more oral infections and complications. And I know that can be very difficult depending on dental insurance, but there are insurance, low-income dentists that can help provide these things. So good dental health is definitely highly recommended for all of our patients.
What kind of stress comes with being part of the sandwich generation when you're raising kids, caring for parents? What do you see there?
I see that is a very difficult stage for people. And it kind of depends. Some people will notice it in their 40s. Depends on the health of their loved ones. So some people will start to deal with these issues in their 30s. Some people will see in their 40s and even into their 50s where they're kind of stuck in between. They're raising their kids. They're working really hard and trying to save for retirement someday, planning ahead. But then they're also starting to have to help their parents a little bit more and seeing some of those things that maybe their parents are having health issues. Maybe they're having more difficulty taking care of their home and they're kind of really stuck taking care of both sides. And it's just a lot more demands that can be put upon you.
Well, before we have to go, let's end on a positive note. What are some good changes that happen in our 40s?
Well, there are lots of good changes, I think. I think the big things are one, you're a little bit more secure. Often we're a little bit more secure in where we're at. We are a little more comfortable in who we are at that age. We've had, you know, you've done it, you've seen it, you've been there.
Life experiences.
A lot of life experience.
Yeah.
And you've had that, you have the joy of different, you know, of seeing that and being able to start to educate our younger population. If you don't have kids, you still can help to, you know, your younger coworkers and other things and just have that advice that is beneficial.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Matthew Herbst is a family medicine physician with SSM Health, and that provides care to patients across Illinois, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin. And we've been learning about the good and the bad and the unavoidable changes to our health in midlife. And a new coffee shop in Stevens Point showcases one of Wisconsin's best roasters. The owner of Ruby Coffee Roasters worked on the West Coast with some of the nation's most prestigious coffee companies. But when it came to start his own business, he did it in central Wisconsin. Rob Menser has the story.
They're steaming milk for cappuccinos, but the Ruby Coffee Roasters Cafe hasn't opened its doors yet. They're training new employees.
This is a pretty beefy grinder. I like how this one sounds.
Owner Jared Linsmeyer can't say he isn't nervous about the big new step for his business.
No, I'm absolutely terrified, you know, that we love this idea and that we're going to like lose everything on it.
Ruby Coffee is a sensation. Some weeks they roast as much as 4,000 pounds of coffee at their facility in Nelsonville, a tiny town in Portage County. In February, Food and Wine magazine named them the best coffee in Wisconsin. But they've never had a cafe before. Almost all of their business has been through wholesale and online orders. It might seem surprising that the best coffee roaster in Wisconsin is based in the rural center of the state, but Ruby Coffee Roasters really couldn't have been started anywhere else.
For filter, we have
Jared is from Stevens Point. After he graduated college in the early 2000s, he moved to Los Angeles, where he got a job working at Intelligentsia Coffee's first West Coast cafe. That's also where he met his future wife, Deanna. When the company started a roastery, Jared became an apprentice. And as he advanced in the world of specialty coffee, he and Deanna moved to Portland and then Seattle. By the time they had their first daughter, they felt like downtown Seattle wasn't the right place to raise their family.
There's nowhere you can take a one-year-old to toddle around and learn how, you know what I mean? Have to hold her hand all the time or she's going to get hit by a truck.
Moving the family to Wisconsin in 2013, just before their second daughter was born, offered them access to family, friends, and a burgeoning food scene in Stevens Point. Deanna had her own business as a consultant to nonprofits, which brought in enough to get Ruby off the ground.
We were living for almost free at the house I grew up in. So that was a huge help. And
because of that really low overhead, we were able to just kind of chip away at startup costs just with the money that I was bringing in.
Small cities and towns in Wisconsin need to attract young entrepreneurs like the Linsmeyers, who are both in their 30s. A 2017 report from the UW-Madison's Applied Population Lab found that only 15% of Wisconsin communities are seeing growth among young adults. The problem is especially acute in rural areas and in the Northwoods. Something else the researchers noted, one of the things young adults said they value the most in a place to live is a good coffee shop. Jared said that in 2019, the desire for specialty coffee is definitely not just a big city thing.
Now there's great coffee in Eau Claire, there's great coffee in Door County, there's great coffee up north.
On the day of the ribbon cutting at the new cafe, the room is filled with supporters and friends. Also there is 90-year-old Grandma Ruby.
I just love the coffee shop and the Ruby coffee roaster that he named after me, his grandmother.
Jared and Deanna hold a daughter each as he speaks to the crowd.
Man, so Ruby was just like this dream in 2013.
Jared was nervous before, but he's feeling good today. They've added 14 people to work at the cafe, and the company now employs 24. Cafe manager Katie Demlow moved back to Wisconsin from Washington, D.C. for the job. They all go outside, and Ruby herself cuts the ribbon. And with that, people walk over to the counter to order some coffee. Rob Menser, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, marshy areas of northwestern Wisconsin are home to a prehistoric plant that can hold 20 times its weight in water. We'll talk with a local farmer about growing sphagnum moss. We'll learn about the plant's unusual properties and how its commercial production became known as Wisconsin's invisible industry. It's sphagnum moss and your questions about how to use it. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.